Welcome to Eucharist Church.
.ca.
Do you have a story for us?
So, a week ago, I pulled the car into the driveway to go back into the house to get something, and I threw the car into what I thought was park. And leapt out of the car really fast and got myself to this place where I was between the car and the door of the car and realized that the car was going backwards. And not that it actually was in...
In your driveway.
In my driveway. Not that it was in neutral, which is what I hoped, and I sort of tried to push it to stop it. But then it started to go faster, and I realized that it was in reverse. And I had a couple of choices. None of them were very good. I could drop to the ground and try to get out from under the door, but that meant that I was going to hurt myself really badly, or at worst, I'd get run over by the car. Or I would just run with the car down the driveway, across the street, which thankfully there were no other cars on, and smashed really hard into the telephone pole on the other side of the road.
It's such a nightmare story.
It was. And so I pulled up, back up the driveway, put the car in the parking lot, and went in the house and texted you and told you that I thought I needed to take a day or two off.
Yeah, well done there. We were reflecting on this, and I was trying to telling you a story that the other night I was trying to put our daughter to bed. And she's doing some sleep training stuff. We're trying to even like tighten that up. But there had been a bunch of times in the night where we had had this kind of up and down fight and you've got to go in your room and tears and all that stuff. And I was sitting downstairs and I was thinking like, oh my gosh, what is it that's stressing me out so much? I feel so stressed out. I couldn't put my finger on it. And I went, oh, it's that at any minute my kid might call for me and interrupt the moment of peace I have. That's what it is. And then I went, oh no, it's that the world has ended. The future is dead. The past is suspect. Everything's been thrown up.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what I'm actually thinking about minute of the day, all the time.
Yeah. And that's why I'm anxious.
And that's why we're having our cars run over ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we've been thinking about this recently and then realizing that most weeks we've been having Zoom calls with people and meeting with groups from church and meeting with groups from the city and found that everybody seemed to have that same kind of zombie look in every call and that everyone we talked to about anything was just like, I'm feeling max, I'm feeling exhausted, and that we aren't the only ones obviously feeling this in this moment, that there's kind of this behind the scenes, always working worry, anxiety, and uncertainty that we are all carrying around with us. And when we talked about this, you pulled out the metaphor of the desert.
Mm.
Can you share a bit more with everybody about the desert?
Yeah, I think that what we realized was that for most of us right now, for better or worse, we have had a lot of things in our lives stripped away. And most of the things that we've had stripped away are the things that give us joy and the things that give us our reason for living,
mm-hmm.
That we've lost our friends in many ways, or we've lost the sports that we love, or we've lost just the opportunity to go out to a restaurant. We've lost the things that are the things that give us joy and our sense of meaning. And what we're left with in a lot of ways is too much time with ourselves, mm-hmm. and too much time with the who am I and what am I in this time and place? When we were talking about this, it reminded us of the time when Jesus went into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and he fasted. And while he was there in the desert, he was tempted by the devil.
And so this week, we wanted to take a pause from Acts. We realized that in some ways, it's good to have the consistency of something like the Book of Acts so that every Sunday isn't like, hi, everyone, we're all still depressed. It's nice to talk about other things and look at the church and its origin story. But we did feel like this week it might be good to just pull back and take a bit of time to explore what it feels like right now, this desert moment that we're kind of all in. It's like we're in a big shared desert experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then to pause from Acts to look at the life of Jesus and how he encounters the devil in Acts, and how his baptism story plays into that. So we're going to throw it over to a couple of readers from our community who are going to share the text for this week, and then we'll pop back in here afterwards and give a few reflections on the lies from the devil in the wilderness. Take it away, readers.
Oh. Greetings, gentle viewers. You might be wondering who I am and how I've been coping in these unusual times. My name is Jonathan, and I'm a newcomer to Eucharist.
Hello, it's Lily.
Hey, Eucharist Church. My name is Tabby.
My wife and I started attending near the end of last year.
During the COVID season, I've been going to work, and I have been taking the GO Transit into Toronto.
And I'm home right now with my sister and my mom during the days of the week.
For the last 2 months, I've committed myself to cultivating my talents, and that decision has turned out to be a very good one.
And I direct a food bank there as well as a income tax clinic, and so we serve refugees, newcomers, and low-income families and individuals.
It has filled my life with the joy of creating things, of thinking well, and I'm actually in a very positive space.
And then during my free time, I like to cook and dance and visit my sister down the road, who has a 2-month-old baby. And yeah, that's been really nice, but also difficult because I really want to hold him.
I'm really excited to see who the Jonathan that comes out of this will look like.
So just getting into the text, the reading today comes from Matthew chapter 13, verse 13 to Matthew chapter 4, verse 11. And it reads,
"Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, 'I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?'
But Jesus answered him, saying, 'Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness.' Then he consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said,
'This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased.'
Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil.
He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. And the tempter came and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, then command these stones to become loaves of bread.'
But he answered, 'It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God.'
Then the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him,
'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone.'
Jesus said to him, 'Again, it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test.'
Again the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in their splendor, and said to him,
'All these I will give you, if you will fall down and worship me.'
Jesus said to him, 'Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him.'
Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him."
Pretty dope.
So Jill, before we jump into the three lies, do you want to talk to us for a second about the devil? Because I think lots of people have this image then of like, oh, he met the devil in the wilderness and he was wearing red and was on fire. But that's not how the devil is necessarily portrayed in this text, what the character of the devil is.
No, I think that for the purposes of this story, the devil is the voice of temptation. The devil is the voice that comes to Jesus and questions him and tempts him to do things that are outside of God's purposes and wills for him. And I think that as we talk about the lies of the devil with respect to our own lives, often the devil is that voice that comes to us and turns us away from knowing ourselves as we ultimately should know that God knows us.
Mm. So he's not just lying. Yeah, in this text, he's not just lying about what Jesus should do, but he's lying about who he is. He's saying, you're not who God has said you are, and you don't have to do things the way that God has called you to do things. You can follow me and follow this other voice instead.
And you can follow your own insecurities and your own desire for these kinds of things that the voice of the devil is holding out to him. These potentials for power and glory and things that he would be tempted by.
Right.
As we are also tempted by.
If he's truly human, that he also would have felt the temptation to pursue, just like we all would.
Right.
Which is why, as we've talked about this, it's really important that Christian theology have an idea of the devil. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the ruler of hell with his throne and his, you know, all of that's kind of mythology around the devil. But it's really important that Christian theology have the devil, because it helps us know that when we hear lies, they don't come from within. They're not our truest selves. And they don't come from our Father. They come from this spiritual foe, this adversarial force that, whether or not anyone believes in the devil, they've certainly encountered these moments of facing down the real lies about who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've all encountered to some degree the voice of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to walk through some of these lies?
Yeah, so Henry Nouwen.
Patron saint of Eucharist Church.
I know, love Henry Nouwen.
So Henry Nouwen says.
he talked about the fact that there were three basic lies that we tell ourselves as humans. The first being, I am what I do. The second being, I am what others think of me. And the third being, I am what I have. And that in many ways, those lies that we hear about the core of our worth are mirrored by the temptations that Jesus experienced in the desert. So the first one, I am what I do, he talks about this idea that in offering Jesus the opportunity to turn stones into bread, he was looking at that ability to have power and control over his environment, to change something from one thing into another, to meet his own needs in that, mm-hmm. to provide from broken stones, to provide sustenance for himself. And that for us, often, that I am what I do. And I am what I do is I have to do things. I have to be somebody. I have to have a job. I have to be a good parent. I have to do things to know who I am. And I think in a time like this, for many of us, that if I am what I do, and now I'm not doing anything,
then am I anything?
Am I anything? And that's that sense of powerlessness, that sense that we don't have control, and the anxiety that comes out of that sense that I can't make this be what I want it to be. And that a lot of anxiety comes out of that.
And the primary idols of that, when you've talked with me about this, is that the myth of power and control, or
right.
the seeking after the idolatry of having power and having control over the circumstance.
Right.
Then I am what I do.
Which in our normal lives, all the things that we do create this sense that we do have power and
right.
that we do have control. And something like a pandemic, for many of us, for most of us, really illustrates the fact that sense that we have power in our own lives, that we have control over what happens to us, is elusive.
It's because in many ways it takes some outside force to reveal how little power we have in mm-hmm. control. So maybe you mm-hmm. get diagnosed, or you lose someone you love, or you know, something traumatic happens and you realize you don't have power and control. In this moment,
right.
there is a kind of grand revealing that none of us have as much control as we wish we maybe had.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first lie, I am mm-hmm. what I do. What's the second lie in the text?
The second lie is, I am what other people think of me, or what others think of me. And when we were chatting about this earlier, Kevin was saying, well, no, for me, it's what I do. And then we realized that sometimes the lie is, I am what I do, but I do in order that others will think well of me.
Thank you for exposing me in front of the whole congregation, Jill.
We both resonate
we
with
both
this one
resonate
in particular.
With this one. They're all bad, but this one got us.
So the voice of temptation says to Jesus, I'm going to take you up to this high place and you're going to jump down and the angels are going to come and gather you up and it's going to be spectacular and you will
right
be
right in the pinnacle of the temple, like right there in front of everybody.
Right. Right. And that the temptation, the idol there, the underlying affirmation that he would be seeking is the idea of affirmation and acceptance. Mm. That what I do in order to see people being amazed. I mean, all of Jerusalem would have seen him being caught up by the angels, and just how much adoration and affection would come out of that.
Affection and attention. Mm-hmm. So there's the second one. So first myth is I am what I do. Second myth is I am what others think of me.
And again, I think in a pandemic kind of time like this, it's another place where if I am what others think of me and suddenly I'm all by myself, then I don't have the reflection of other people to tell me who I am, which also I think adds to the sense of people have talked about this being the loneliest of lonely times.
Right.
That sense of if who I am is always reflected as a mirror off the people around me and there are no people around me, what do I do with that?
So this might be where, you know, in some seasons or in some ways, social media can be really healthy. But the negative side of this kind of thing would be this is now the time where you are posting way more on social media. You want to show everyone what you're doing. You want to get in every Zoom call because you need others to see you and think well of you during this time to survive, because otherwise you're just alone, because most of the natural ways people affirm you at your workplace or in your relationships have been removed by this desert season.
Yeah, and even if you're affirmed on social media, we know how flat that is, that right. That just sense of the one dimensionality of social media just never allows us to be fueled by that the way that we need to be fueled, if that's something that is the lie we tell ourselves.
Okay, so I am what I do, I am what others think of me, and the third lie is?
Is I am what I have. And I am what I have obviously has a material piece to it. I am the things that I, the stuff I have. I am the house that I have or the apartment that I have or the car I have or the whatever it is that I have that I put value in. But it's also I am what I have as in I have a family or I have a spouse or I don't have a spouse or I have children or I don't have children. And I measure myself by what I have that either works for me because it affirms me because I have the things that I think that I need to have, or I don't have the things that I want to have, and then that tells me that I'm not what I should be because I don't have what I should have.
That's good. And what are the core, well, this one then, the kingdoms of the world would be the devil bringing him up and saying, look at the kingdoms of the world, I'll give all this to you,
You'll have all of this.
If you bow down and worship me, if you get at it in this kind of way. What are the primary idols of this lie?
Well, I think that they are this idea of safety and security, that if I am surrounded and buffered by the things that I have, by the by my tribe of people, by my little bubble of people who are important to me, if they're there for me, then I feel safe and secure. And again, in a time like this, many of us find that we don't have the things that we feel we need to have in order to provide us with that bubble of security and safety. And so again, the sense of this kind of free-floating anxiety that I can't make myself be what I feel like I should be in this time is again part of that sort of tearing down of the things that we hold on to feel okay about ourselves.
And I imagine in this also would be just financial concerns that people have as their job shift, their gigs are canceled. You know, I am what I do might be, I need to go to work to prove myself. But I am what I have is, you know, I need to go to work to have the resources to maintain the life that I have. And that is what comes under fire in this third lie, that I won't have the resources I need to be the person I've always been, who is defined by my...
And safe.
My safety.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about the lie? Like, do each of us have all of these lies in our head? Is there one that rings true?
Well, I'm pretty sure that for most of you, there is one of those that resonates most easily for you, that you live most of your life out of either that desire for power and control or that desire for affirmation and affection and affirmation, or that desire for security and safety. There's probably one of those that rings most clear for you. But I think that we all experience all of those lies. And I think that in a time like this, a desert time caused by a pandemic where we do less, we have less, we get less affirmation from the people around us, that probably for most of us, one of those lies may be primary, so, but we're bing, hearing bing, them all.
Bing. Got it. So as we talked about this, we were thinking, so what's the answer to this? You know, right. What does the Bible say? What does the gospel say? What does Jesus say to these lies? And as we were chewing on it, we had this kind of revelation. You had this really good insight. You said, you know, I think that the three things that are said to Jesus counteract these lies, the three statements in his baptism, which then we Googled and found out that people have been saying this for quite some time. We're just late to the party. But each of these lies is countered by something that the Father says at the baptism of Christ. And sometimes we look at Jesus' baptism as a uniquely Jesus thing. But if we're all meant to be members of the body of Christ, and if we're all meant to be Jesus, then what is true for Jesus at his baptism mm-hmm. is true for each of us mm-hmm. as we step into his life and his way of being.
And it's important, I think, in Matthew that Jesus' baptism comes right before the temptations.
And in Luke, in both the gospel accounts.
And that
right
there's this sense that before he went into the desert to be tempted, it was important that Jesus had this really clear sense of who he was.
Okay, so we're at 12 minutes, so we're going to wrap it up. But before we wrap it up, wanted to give some of the maybe some of the ways that the Spirit might be speaking to you and I to respond to these lies based on how Jesus was affirmed by his Father. So the first lie, I am what I do. We have a shift when we're living in the Spirit and we're living in God's kingdom from I am what I do to I am who I am in you. Mm-hmm. Not I am what I do, but I am who I am in you. And we see this in the statement from the Father that says, this is my son, is what he says to Jesus in his baptism. Mm-hmm. This is my daughter. This is my child. And that our identity isn't something we earn by striving and doing, but something that is given to us in our adoption into God's family. It's not earned. It's not maintained. There is nothing we could do to earn our adoption. And there's nothing we could do to lose mm-hmm. our adoption. Mm-hmm. And so in a world of striving doing, we're invited to hear the voice that says, you are, or I am who I am in you. I have been adopted into your family. This is my beloved child. Mm-hmm. On the lie of, I am what others think of me. The truth is we can say to God, I am who you think I am. Not I am what others think, but I am ultimately who God thinks I am, and who God thinks I am is his beloved child. And in this line, in particular in the baptism, spoke to us, with him I am well pleased. So who am I? How do others think of me? Well, actually, our Father thinks of us and is well pleased with us, which is not just about how we are good people and try our best, but anyone who has someone they truly love knows that you love them not just based off what they do, but just based off who they are. Your children, your friends, they bring you pleasure not just because they do good things, but because of who they are. And so in a world that has us fighting for the affection and esteem of other people all the time and trying to win the praise of other people, we're invited to, is it Oz Guinness?
Oz Guinness.
Mm-hmm. We're invited to live for, you want to say it? It's your line. You love it.
Yeah. Oz Guinness talks about living for an audience of one, that rather than trying to care about what everybody else thinks about us, that where we should be focused is on that audience of one who is pleased with us and does love us and gives us all affirmation and affection, and if we just keep our eye on that, we are not so tempted to go seeking affections and affirmations in other places.
Which is just so freeing mm-hmm. in a time of, you know, how do I show the world around me that I'm doing a good job and get their affection and esteem? It is good news to release that and to receive it only from the Father. In the same way that in a world of doing, it's good news to say, I don't actually have to do, I can receive from the Father my new, my identity as son or daughter. And finally, I am what I have, which the response to that lie is not I am what I have, but you give me what I need. That the Father provides daily bread for his kids. He provides us all that we need every single day for what we need. This is in the line, this is my son of Jesus in the baptism. This is my son my beloved, mm-hmm. with whom I am well pleased. But this is my beloved. And we don't let our beloved starve. Mm-hmm. And we don't let our beloved be harmed unnecessarily. We care for our beloved. And so here in a world of, you know, I am what I have, the Father says to us, you don't need to worry about what you have. I have everything. You know, to quote the prophet, that the cattle on a thousand hill belong to God. So if you need cattle, I guess you're set. Your daily bread, your rain, your clothing. This is Jesus in the Beatitudes talking about, don't worry about tomorrow because you will be provided for, mm-hmm. if you remain as the child of God. You're safe and you're secure in God's provision. And so at each of these times when the devil comes to Jesus and tries to convince him of these lies and tries to play these lies off as truth, Jesus instead is so in tune with the Spirit, who also comes to him in the baptism, mm-hmm. so good, that he's walking with the Spirit so he does not hear the Satan. He's walking with the advocate so he doesn't hear the accuser. And I feel like in most of our lives, we are going to hear reality through one voice or the other. We're either going to hear the circumstance we're in through the voice of the Satan, which is going to be these lies. You are what you do. You are what others think of you. You are what you have. Or we can walk with the Spirit and know that our Father is going to provide for us and that these lies are just that. They're lies.
And I think that these are very core identity questions. And we live most of our lives really busy and really entertained and really distracted, and we don't spend time really thinking about what our identity is and questioning what our identity is. And so if you're really uncomfortable in this time, I think that it's really interesting to ask yourself how much of that discomfort comes out of that sense that you don't know who you are anymore, and whether there is something that can be redeemed for you in knowing who you are in Jesus, regardless of what's happening in this pandemic time. We just want you to know that we know how you feel. We feel the same way. We know that people are struggling, and that even in their struggling, there's this weird sense that I feel uncomfortable and I feel anxious and I don't know what to do, but I'm fine. And so I don't want to say I'm not okay, because I should be okay, but I don't really feel okay. And when we met with the elders on Monday remotely, we talked about once again wanting to encourage you to acknowledge and be okay with that discomfort, that we want to walk this road together. We are the Israelites in the desert together, for the good or bad of that. And that we want to really invite you to speak your truth and speak your discomfort, either to us or to each other, that we really want to encourage you to contact us and let us know if there's something that we can do to help you. If you would benefit from somebody driving you to an appointment, if you could use a meal. And I know a meal is just a meal, but I have had days in the last little while where I just thought, you know what? I wish somebody else was bringing me dinner. I just wish dinner would appear, perhaps. This is really what it is. That I could turn a stone into bread. Those things matter. Would you benefit from having a prayer partner, someone who you could connect with regularly and pray? Or would it benefit you for one of the elders or Kevin and I to just arrange to get together with you and pray over something, or even have someone who can help you problem solve through something that's got you troubled and you don't have another place to sort mm-hmm. of have that conversation? So we really are hoping that you will reach out either to us or the elders or to each other if you need to. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to need to, even if there really isn't anything wrong.
Yeah, this is not a time to pretend you're strong.
No.
In the wilderness, we need the Spirit and we need one another. And we've been given the body of Christ in one another.
Yep.
So yeah, please feel free to email in to the elders at eucharistchurch.ca or to Kevin or Jill at eucharistchurch.ca if you want to talk with one of us. And we are clearing out time in the week to just make sure that we can be attentive to this stuff together and check in, keep checking in on one another and creating this culture across our city where we don't need to be strong. We don't need to be resilient. We don't need to be alone overcoming the devil in the desert. We are together in the desert. Mm-hmm. We are walking together in the desert with Christ, with the Spirit. And it's okay then in those spaces to reveal that we are desperately in need of one another, reminding us of the good news of the grace that has been given to us and carrying our burdens together. Do you want to close this out with a prayer?
Sure. Yeah, let's just take a second and close your eyes and think about what you know of your identity. What part of your identity do you feel firmly entrenched in God's arms? And what part of your identity are you still seeking something in the world to meet for you or match for you? And I invite you to just think about those words. This is my child, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased. God, I just ask that in these strange times when so many things feel stripped away and where we feel so exposed and so vulnerable because we just don't have the stuff around us that normally keeps us from ourselves, that you will call out the lies, that we will learn to hear the voice that is your voice, the voice that is calling us to be your children, your beloved, and that knowing that we can rest in that, knowing that we can believe that, knowing that we can have those needs for power and control and affirmation and affection and safety and survival are all found in you. And that remembering that, we can hold our anxiety and our stress at bay. God, we are a people who turn to you in this time, and we know that when we turn to you, you are there for us. We thank you that our identity is in you and only in you. Amen.
Amen.